The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Woo! It's hot outside. And it's hot inside, only because Dr. Doug Hughes is in the house.
I am.
No one's ever introduced you that way.
No. Oh, no one's ever thought that or introduced me that way. It's absolutely amazing.
This week has thrown me off because, number one, I was set to be in the Gulf of Mexico on Monday, returning Tuesday from a fishing trip. That got canceled because of high seas. And then Wednesday, we had the Juneteenth holiday. And here we are on Thursday.
And so, I was to be in Boston, and that didn't come to fruition. So we had all kinds of things. Yeah. Our plans just went awry.
This is like Monday to me, and then tomorrow's Friday, so it's like a great week.
Exactly.
It's like back-to-back weeks. I was actually going to bring up Juneteenth briefly because I was like, okay, we had it off. The office was closed. The markets were closed. The banks were closed. Post office closed. Everything was closed. So Carolyn at our office takes it upon herself, which is fine, Carolyn, you deserve this. You've been there a long time, and you're great, to look at the calendar, literally the first week of January, and mark everything out. I feel like we're county workers now. Like, we get off for everything. But anyway, it was nice because I went fishing in the morning for Casa Blanca, and you've been hearing a lot about Casa here on the radio. I was a 13-year board member for them, and now retired, but I offer up every year a fishing experience with me, and it gets bought every year, and I've had so much fun with that. This year, Lester and Nick were with us, and I brought with me a ringer, which is Blake Albertson, Allstate agent down on the south side of town. His dad was a really good friend of mine, and he is I'm going to call him a semi-pro fisherman. And, he won the National Collegiate Championship in bass fishing, him and Adam Puckett, Shelley that works with us, back in 18 or 19. And Monroe's his home lake. So I'm like, hey, would you go with us? So he went with us, and we had a blast. I mean, an absolute blast. Bass fishing was slow, 6:30 in the morning, but then we went crappie fishing and caught some great big crappie, had a great time. It was so much fun. And we were talking about it because it was Juneteenth. He was off. I was off. And I'm like, let's go. So when else do you get to go on a Wednesday morning? So anyway, a couple of younger people at our office, and maybe some of the more older people in our office, they don't really even know what Juneteenth is. So I'm like, we need to be more descriptive. I mean, we have Independence Day coming up, right? Everyone knows 4th of July, Independence Day. We have President's Day. We know what that's about. Heck, we even have Arbor Day. I know what that's about, right? Plant a Tree Day.
Yes.
But Juneteenth is just not very descriptive. So I've been really on this like mission to say, okay, we need to come up with a new name for this holiday that says what it actually means. And honestly, I didn't know exactly what it meant. I had to get on the old Google or goggle, as my brother Mark puts it, and say, what is it exactly? Well, I guess it was the fact that 2 years prior is when the proclamation was made to free all slaves, but it was 2 years later that it was finally kind of forced upon like 250,000 people still in slavery down in Texas. So that was sort of that was it. So I'm trying to figure out like what do we call this to make sure that people know what it is. So but I appreciate having the middle of the week off. It was kind of fun, and I don't know, maybe it's going to dictate some of my future travel plans right around Juneteenth. I mean, we want to make the most productive time of our travel. So
sure.
if I can travel from a Thursday to a Sunday, or a Friday to a Monday, or a Friday to a Tuesday, it keeps work office time more
intact.
Absolutely. It
keeps a couple days in the office just to be in touch with everything that's going on.
And it's amazing how much you can get. And I think everyone's this way. I mean, I probably could get done what I get done in 5 days, in 3 days, if I really buckled down and got after it. So, I mean, I think maybe we should have every Wednesday off. Why not? Monday, Tuesday. Wednesday could be a at-choice day. I feel like I live in Seattle now. I mean, that's the way they do it in Seattle. If you want it off, take it off.
Well, so the question is, do we want all the support staff to hear you saying this?
They don't listen to the show. Are you kidding me?
I know they don't.
They have to listen to me all day, every day. Oh, that's funny.
They're probably not our biggest fans on the show.
No, they know when we come, and they know when we come back, and that's about it. All right, let's do a little market news. Of course, brought to you by Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at 812-323-8300. And Dirk Bland, Kenny Bland Auctions, normally they're in Orange Beach this time of year because there's some place high school football at Bloomington South, and they have this little window of opportunity. But I texted him as I was getting ready to head to Orange Beach to see if he was down there, and he was not because he says he needs to work. A lot of people needing to get rid of a lot of things. And they are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate and real estate as well, and he's great at that. If you want to know who the buyers are, put it up for auction, and they'll come out of the woodwork, and then you can go from there. So go to KennyBlandAuctions.com. All right, real quickly, the 10-year Treasury landed this week or last week at 4.2%. I was looking 1 month ago. It was 4.45%. And a year ago, it's up about 10% from a year ago. And that really drives mortgage rates. Class asked me about that on Wednesday. So we're seeing mortgage rates now below 7%. And based on where the Treasury is, they should be sitting around 6.25% in a more normalized market. But they're ticking in around 6.8, 6.9 right now if you're a decent borrower. All right, stocks last week notched a solid gain, driven by the Fed's decision, the May inflation report, and Apple's AI-related news. Boy, did that make some news. The S&P, NASDAQ was up almost 3.25% last week. The Dow was the only one that slid just a little bit, down 0.5%. The international index, we rarely talk about, which tracks the overseas markets, fell 1.44%. And Doug and I talked about that as we recapped his trip around Asia and how they invest in Australia and other countries as well. But the market leadership took a familiar form. The tech-heavy NASDAQ led while the Dow trailed for the second week. In four out of the past six, stocks did trend a little higher the start of the week as investors cheered the artificial intelligence update from Apple. And they cheered pretty loud, at least for a while. By midweek, the market had slipped a little, the NASDAQ and S&P moving higher while the Dow again stayed down. There was some upbeat feeling right after learning consumer prices rose less than expected in May, and the Fed decided to keep rates steady as expected. Some were unsettled after learning Fed officials had shifted their outlook. Big, big surprise. No surprise here. You've heard this on the show, golly, since for the last year, that their outlook is now only penciling in one single rate cut between now and the end of the year. A few months ago, heck, the Fed had indicated we might have as many as three rate cuts this year. So the last week's clock was full of market-moving events between the Apple AI update, inflation, and the Fed. It was a toss-up which one kind of influenced sentiment more. But AI, outsized role in driving the market momentum, continued. Open AI deals with Apple arrived at the start of last week, and the news followed OpenAI's deal earlier this year with Microsoft. Of course, when we talk about these companies, don't forget my compliance thing is we're not recommending to buy or sell or hold any security. We're just talking about it to talk about it. And then we had Wednesday morning's Consumer Price Index. It was announced a few hours later. The Fed updated its monetary policy. Those pieces of news have only arrived together, believe it or not, 13 times since 2008. And of course, the FOMC, they said we're going to keep the rate steady right around 5.25%. And that tame CPI report caused some volatility as the market grappled with how these reports might influence Fed policy going forward. So, Dougie, what's this week been looking like?
Well, the markets have been rather tame, I should say. It hasn't been a big swing one way or another as we're sitting here right now. The NASDAQ is off, but it's not off, you know, significantly. A couple hundred points, so it's not, you know, it's off maybe 1%, so nothing outrageous is going
really
on. It's kind of a steadier market. As we get into the summertime, the markets tend to kind of be that way.
We're going to do a halftime report at the office in a couple of weeks, and I know you were going to be talking maybe more about the value in long-term investing, and I think this is a really a good time to talk about that.
Absolutely, and we like to go back and remind people, if you are 60 years old or 65 and you're retiring, you still have, you know, 20 to 30 year time frame ahead of you.
Yeah, you don't go stick
invest.
All your sand in the sandbox and go play in it.
Right.
You got to have some out there still growing.
Right, and the complexion changes when someone is 30 and they're going to age 60. That's one prescription for investments for 30 years, but then from 60 to say let's say age 90 and you're beginning to use income, you still need to be invested, but now you're generating income, not reinvesting it typically.
Right.
And so there is a switch, but it's still a 30-year time frame. And so the great Chinese philosopher said that that nature is not in a hurry, but it's always complete. And, you know, you're looking at the trees out the window here, right? I mean, those trees are going to grow a certain height, and they just did it every single year. They weren't in a hurry. They just kind of quietly compounded every year until they got to their height. And so when we talk about long-term investing, we just remind people that, you know, you'd say it's long-term from 30 to 60, but
we're growing
60,
trees, not weeds, folks.
That's
growing
right.
Trees, not weeds.
And trees have caps.
Yeah. Younger participants showing strong interest in 401k plans. Some new interest, new data came out. I wanted to share that with you. And then really digging into the details of why that's the case, that we're seeing such large participation with the young people. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes on this toasty Thursday. It's going to be even hotter, I think, Friday and Saturday before some storms come rolling in on Sunday. My wife's trying to figure out pool time at our house for the weekend. We're kind of just getting things opened up out there. I think she had people out there today. So it's happening. Summer is here. Today is the first day of summer, technically, like now.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And it's the longest day of the year as well, too, right? The 21st, I think, is actually the longest day.
Yep.
So tomorrow is the summer solstice.
So I'm preparing a short fireworks show for Ryan Belcher at our office's daughter's birthday
Chloe.
Party on Saturday night. And then, of course, I'm gearing up for my big Independence Day celebration, which
I may show up at that birthday party.
You should.
I've heard rumors of hamburgers and hot dogs. I don't eat hot dogs, but I've heard rumors of hamburgers and quite a fireworks show.
I'm going to show up about 8 o'clock to get set up because we've got people at the house that day. So that's our plans. All right, folks, I promised you last week I'd talk about it this week, but younger participants show strong interest in 401k plans. This comes from some recent data. 40% of participants are in their 20s and 30s. So 40% of people that are in a plan are in their 20s and 30s. That's some new data that was released by the Employee Benefit Research Institute and the Investment Company Institute. Shows that younger participants and new hires are more keen on 401k plans. Well, of course they are. At the end of 2022, 40% were in their 20s and 30s. 23% were in their 40s. And the median age was 44, and 48% of participants in the database had five or fewer years of tenure, including nearly a quarter of two or fewer years under their belt. I just found it was really fascinating, some of the data here, because you mentioned this, the average account balance was $70,320. Of course, all the factors that go into that include age, tenure, salary, contribution, rollovers from other plans, asset allocation, withdrawals, loan activity, employer contribution rates. Of course, older participants have the larger balances. Groups in their 50s and 60s held 64% of the total assets, where participants in their 20s and 30s had about 13%. Now, let me tell you why this is going on. Well, number one, I wrote a piece, golly, back in the 90s, early 90s. I think it was around 98. But it was the death of the pension, and it was basically using some of the Harry Dent demographics that I used to follow a lot and just trying to understand why this is happening. Well, first of all, let's go back to your grandparents. Everyone had a pension, and everyone stayed in the same job. Not everybody, but most people stayed in the same job for 30 or 40 years. They would retire. They would have a pension. They'd have Social Security, so they didn't have to rely on their personal savings for very much at all. Well, then you had the baby boomers come along, and that generation was the one that started having the pensions taken away and more defined contribution plans, which is like your 401ks, your 403bs, where they put it on to you to make your retirement successful. But none of them really were told exactly what they needed to do until many of them it was way too late. And why? Because the people in front of them had pensions. No one was saying, hey, by the way, you need to save money. But now the boomers are saying to their kids, as soon as they get their very first job, hey, put 10% in the 401k plan right away. And they're like, I can't afford to do that, Dad. We're like, well, hey, you were broke before. Just pretend like you're still broke and do it. And then the employer will match, usually at least 3% and sometimes a lot more than that. So that's why I think the younger people are participating, one, because they need to, but two, people are telling them to do it, Doug.
Absolutely. And there's so much more education now, but it is becoming a little bit, I think, glaring to young people that we're on our own. And the more we recognize that, the more we realize that there are dangers out there with, I shouldn't say dangers, there are potentials out there with Social Security not being the same. And there's just a lot more education, a lot more people are hearing about it, talking about it. And there is some interest.
And there's interest, I mean, even young people investing. You've got the apps you quickly invest in, you know, you can put your spare change in there, round up. Yeah, I mean, everyone seems to be interested.
And the markets have been reasonably good, you know, coming even after the COVID dip and coming back up, the markets have been reasonably good. So, you know, what attracts investors is success. You know, what pushes investors away is bad markets. And so the markets have been, you know, pretty stable for the last 15 years, besides the COVID dip that was, you know, down and up in 8 weeks. And so that's, you know, people, when they see their values continuing to go up, they begin to become more accustomed to it. But, you know, every investor should remember, markets go through cycles, and there will be statements that don't look as good as others.
But what you can control is how much you put in.
Exactly. You can control how much you put in, and you can control your allocation too.
Right. So there was another article I found called, Is the 401k Industry Entering a Second Golden Age? And honestly, as I read the article, that title didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. But there were a few little cool things that came out of it. I was reading where they had this big Brookings Institute. It was some kind of a thing on retirement plans. And there was this guy named Wayne Park. He is the CEO of John Hancock Retirement. He relayed a story of how Hong Kong nationalized this retirement system, similar to what you were talking about with Australia. And he basically said there is a zero chance that would happen in the U.S. And there could be some federal mandates that could make it easier and less costly and more accessible, but that ain't going to happen. Jeff Rosenberg, you know who that is.
Yes.
He asked about some of the retroactive mandating of auto features required for the plans over the next year, kind of making it sound like we could have a secure 3.0 coming along. And pretty interesting stuff because, like I said, you don't want to mandate maybe that people do something, but certainly auto-enrolling them at a good rate, not a bad rate, meaning 10%, not 3%, you know, having auto-escalate automatically in, because it has been proven now, just like daylight savings time is proven in Indiana not to save electric costs, and I wish we'd go back, that now that we've had this in place for a while, that people do not unenroll. Once they're enrolled, it's like less than like 1% or 2% that actually go in and opt out.
Exactly.
Of enrolling. So I'm just saying, we got to do it, folks. We have to do it.
And everyone's better off over 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years. And that was one of the things I learned from the people in Australia, is that when this first came along, the compulsory, which is 10 to 11%, the corporations were kicking back on it. They're like, this isn't fair. This isn't right. And it was chaos for a while. But 20 years later, they look at it and say, we're all doing better now.
Well, and you look at Social Security, right? I'm sure when they introduced the idea that, hey, for Social Security and Medicare, employer, you have to put in 7.2% of their pay, I'm sure everyone kicked and screamed about that, and that's just the part of, in a way of doing business. So, and it gets all cooked in and priced into prices and things like that. All right, let's talk about the Rothification of retirement plans, those opportunities and complexities, and how it's being kind of forced upon us now as part of that Secure Act 2.0. I'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. The Rothification, or the continued Rothification of retirement plans. What do I mean by that? Well, it means pushing people to go ahead and pay the tax now and not have to pay the tax later. Again, helping us do what we should be doing for ourselves, but now they're making it easier and, in fact, in some cases, mandated that you have to put money away in the Roth side. Let's go back to the beginning of all this. Congress, in 2001, they added this section 402A to the IRS code, which allowed 401k plans to include a qualified Roth contribution program to their elective deferrals, which means people that are putting money in. And then that didn't actually go into effect until 2006. So that happens a lot. So if you look at the Secure Act 2.0, and I talked about things that went into effect in 23 and 24 and 25, all the way up to 2030, it's kind of precedent that this happens. It gives plans and people time to get this thing ready, get plans amended and all that. So Congress amended the Internal Revenue Code to expand the likelihood that plans would include Roth features. Congress then substantially contributed to the Rothification of such plans. Congress also provided advisors with excellent tax planning opportunities, amen to that, while also creating compliance and administrative complexity. So don't forget, folks, whenever they say you can do something like an age-based in-service rollover at 59.5, that doesn't mean your plan will allow it. Just because they say Roth is available doesn't mean your plan had to provide it. But what's happening with what happened in the Secure Act 2.0 is pushing them to now they're going to have to offer this. And here's a couple of reasons why. One, if you earn less than or over $145,000 and you're over 50 like Doug and I do get to include you in that now. Thank you very much.
You do.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you can put more money in your plan. Well, now they're saying if you make 145 or more, you have to put it into the Roth, your catch-up. They're allowing for employer contributions to go into the Roth. Again, that would take a plan amendment. So that's, again, not a requirement, but it's an amendment. The requirement is that if you're over 50 and you want to put money in a catch-up, more money in, and you make over 145, you have to put it into the Roth. I would almost argue that that's bad legislation. I think you should say anyone under a certain amount would have to do it. And that would force people, again, to do things that they should be doing, which is put more money away in the Roth or just eliminate the income thing altogether. So I don't know. I hate little things like that because, you know, if you earn, again, it's not phased in or phased out. It's a cliff thing. If I happen to make $145,001, then I have to go. It has to go in the Roth. What if I don't know how much I'm going to make? What if I get quarterly bonuses or commissions or whatever? I don't know how much I'm going to make. So then all year long, I'm putting money away on the tax deferred side. Oh my gosh, you made, you know, $145,001. We have to retroactively reverse all those contributions. See, that's why I think they usually lay a runway for these things to come into play. You know, like the Roth getting rolled or the 529 getting rolled into a Roth for a beneficiary, you know, that had some time and it still needs to be kind of adjusted and figured out a little bit. That's why I think and I hope something like this finally just goes away because they say, we get your point, IRS, why, or Congress, why you want this in place. I don't really get it, but I guess someone got it. But practically, it's going to be really hard to implement. So, one, Roth contributions have been around for a while. If your plan doesn't allow it, I would bark like a dog tied to a tree. We did that for Indiana University. They didn't have it. We had literally one person that had the ear of somebody, and I was involved with that, and we pushed and pushed and pushed, and lo and behold, they did a big RFP for Indiana University, and they selected Fidelity as their custodian, and guess what? We have now Roth and in-plan Roth conversions available. I don't know if the in-plan Roth conversions are available at IU or not. I forget. But, you know, even employers like Cook, you know, they offer a Roth conversion inside their plan. They offer a Roth option. That wasn't always the case, but they've been early in implementing that. You know, in-service distributions, age 59 and a half. Why do you do that? Because normally your plan, as Doug was talking earlier, may not have investments that are going to be suitable for you to take guaranteed income maybe in that first 5 years of retirement. So you can roll money out at 59 and a half while you're still working, buy some investments that might be more suitable for that early phase of income. I always say it's the get ready phase. But it doesn't have to happen. But most plans allow that. Loans are another one. Loans are, that's up to 50 grand. It's been 50 grand for my 30 years of being in this business. It's never changed. Up to 50% of your account balance or 50 grand, whichever is more. Well, not all plans allow loans. And I'll give you an example. Monroe County Schools does not allow loans. And I think sometimes they don't allow loans because they think it's a good way to keep people from doing stupid stuff. You know what I mean? I don't think it's always bad to take a 401k loan. I think it's very, very a good tool to use. I mean, you pay yourself back. But maybe it's to buy a piece of real estate, or it's to, you know, buy a car instead of loaning the money from or borrowing money from the bank. You're borrowing it from yourself. You know, those are good reasons why. You pay yourself back over 5 years. You have a set interest rate, and you know that's a pretty thoughtful way. But not all plans allow loans either. So just because it's in the law that says it's allowed, it doesn't mean the plan has to offer it. But in some cases, they're going to have to allow the Roth. And I think it's great that they're mandating the catch-up to go into the Roth, because that will force all the plans out there that do not have a Roth to make sure they have a Roth.
Well, and my takeaway from all this, and this is a great explanation that you gave, but my takeaway from all this is how important it is to be working with a professional, an advisor, who is on top of all of these things, because you know what? These decisions are not made by your advisor. They're not made by you. They're not made by your best friend or the person talking about it. It's Congress.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones making these decisions. And the next thing you know, a corporation, as you said, has to respond to those decisions. And by the time you have Congress and the Human Resources Department of your corporation making decisions, you hope you get the right information to make the best decisions for you. So
that's right.
It goes, in my mind, it goes back to the reason why you have someone helping you navigate through the accumulation phase of retirement planning, not just the distribution phase.
Yeah, providers, record keepers, sponsors, they have to make substantial changes to their technology and policies, procedures to comply with all the regs. So it takes a little bit of time. But to your point, participants need assistance to better understand the tax implication of these changes. That gives people like us the opportunity and the fact that we're going to be needed to help people, sponsors, navigate these issues and make really good, educated decisions. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, what is next on the agenda, Duggar? I'm going to look at my outline that I rarely follow.
Looks like we're talking about bond yields.
Yeah, yeah. So there was a pretty good article in the Wall Street Journal. Thank you, Stu. He'd been, since we don't get the Wall Street Journal in the office in paper form anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a habit of mine, to get the paper, go through it. Usually I'd tell Carolyn, save this for me, save that for me. And I don't have that anymore. So we still have the online version, but I need to change my habits so that maybe at nighttime when I'm just perusing around looking online at something, I'm on the Wall Street Journal site, because we don't get it any longer. So thankfully, and I would encourage any of you listening, send me articles that you think are interesting. And this one was, the era of higher savings and bond rates is still going, but don't waste it. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I talked about this, I don't know, several weeks ago about, you know, is parking money in like a high-yield money market, is that a smart thing to do? Is that really a long-term parking spot or just a temporary parking spot? Well, keep in mind, money market rates can change. They change every day, right? So you might be buying into something that's paying 5 or 5.25, but next month it could be 4.5. So there's an opportunity for you to lock things in. So you can lock things in by buying a contract, right? What is a contract? It says, I will pay you this for this long. And we have these higher rates, and I just don't want it to go to waste. So you can lock something in maybe for 3 years or 5 years or maybe even 10 years and get some fixed rate that you're like, dude, I'm happy locking in 5% now for 5 years. And they're out there. They're offered by insurance companies. They're offered by some banks, and they're offered by corporations, municipalities in the form of bonds, CDs, fixed annuities. They're out there. So Americans are still losing lots and lots of money on their money. Have you ever heard me say that before? Have your money make more money? Well, the Federal Reserve has moved to kind of tame inflation, right, by raising interest rates over the past couple of years. We know that they're, well, we don't know. We think they're probably not going to raise them any longer. But, you know, that only affects this overnight borrowing between banks. And I think people don't understand. They don't really affect the rates that are 2 years from here or 5 years from here, 10 years from today. That the bond market affects that. And what affects that is inflation and growth. So if you look out and you say, okay, well, the 10-year Treasury is at 4.2%, well, that's basically telling you that, you know, that it's predicting inflation to be in that 2.5 range, and because then you add a point or point and a half on top of that, and that's where you land. But there's a lot of people that just, you know, by not paying attention or leaving lots of money sitting in their savings accounts. We just had a client in this week, brand new client. I wasn't in the meeting, but Angela said, yeah, she brought her son in, and the son said, Mom, why do you have $90,000 sitting in your checking account? I mean, it's earning nothing. The banks are not going to call you likely and say, hey, by the way, we're tired of paying you nothing on your 90 grand in the checking account. Would you like us to move it to a high yield money market within our bank or a CD? Now, if you walk into the bank and you say, hey, I've got 90 grand sitting in my checking account, what other options do I have? They're going to tell you. It's similar to the IRS, Social Security, everywhere else. They're not going to call you and tell you what you need to be doing. You need to be on top of this stuff. But I was reading that we're literally losing billions of dollars in America by just letting our money sit there. I was looking at this article. It said even savers with small balances could contemplate moving some money. If you have $500, for example, you would earn $2.25 a year from an average savings account, compared with $22.50 if it paid 4.5%. I mean, and that's on $500. I mean, I earned a dinner out at the Mexican place by moving $500 from my money, my checking account, over to a money market account. But 21% of Americans who save don't know how much interest they're earning on their savings accounts or checking accounts, according to a recent survey. And let's see, of those, they don't know. No one even knows. They're not paying attention. I mean, here we are sitting with a 6-month Treasury bill earning 5% or more in interest. Pay attention, folks. Now, I will say this. Some of the brokerage accounts, remember, if you've listened to the show a lot, I was on a rant because the custodian that we use, I'm embarrassed at the amount of interest they pay on their money market, because that's where all these big firms are making a ton of money. I don't care where your money is, you look at it and you're saying, why are they only paying me 0.5% or 1% or 2% on this cash? Well, because they're taking your money and they're going to make more money. But a lot of times it's hard to implement all of your cash, because you might have a strategy in place, like some kind of an investment strategy that requires that cash to be fluid and liquid. Because if you stick it into a money market and I wanted to buy something today, you know, it's kind of hard because I have to sell to create the cash, then it has to settle for me to pay for my trade. So if you're listening, you're frustrated about why I'm not earning anything on my cash, that's the reason behind the advisor's logic, is we just can't really wrap that much up. Now, we try our best to keep as little in cash as possible, but it's hard sometimes. But Doug, the bottom line is, that was kind of a rant on a different stage, but people just need to pay attention.
They do. And you know, David, we talked about long-term money. There's short-term money, long-term money, mid-term money. Well, if we step away from mid-term and long-term money for just a moment, in the next 1 to 3 years, if you have expenses that are coming in the next 1 to 3 years, that's a different profile. Because one of the things that we're looking at in this particular part of the program is it a parking spot, or is it a long-term investment? And what we would say is that if you need money in the next 1 to 3 years, that's a different complexion of risk that you can earn interest on than money you're not going to need for 3 to 10 years. And so when we look at these interest rates now that are paying 5% on money markets, we don't know how long it's going to be. I would take a step back. I've been reading a lot recently about the 1960s to 1982, because we're also focused on 82 to 2022, which was the 40-year decline of the 10-year Treasury that caused real estate to go up and stocks to go up in this great economic system we've had. But not many people talk about the 1960s, mid to late 1960s to 1982, which was a very steady, slow, some dips along the way, but climb to higher interest rates that a lot of our listeners will remember. And so I'm in no way predicting that. I'm just saying, as we're looking at it, we didn't drop rates this year. Everyone's predicting 6, now maybe 2. Now everyone's going into 2025 because they don't know. And I'm not in any way saying interest are going to drop significantly. But what if they kind of continue to stay on this current path that they're on versus just dropping? Nobody knows that for sure. We have guesses, but nobody knows that for sure.
1982, I may be wrong, 20 or 30-year Treasury paying like 12%. why, first of all, why in the world would the U.S. issue something paying that much for that long? Mm-hmm. I mean, math says to me right now, you know, quit issuing short-term debt, issue long-term debt a little longer, maybe 10 years. And 10-year bonds are getting gobbled up. 20 and 30 years, the auctions aren't going so well. If you're in the shorter term, it's going off the – they're flying off the shelf. All right, Doug, I'm going to take another break. I have this theory that if someone sets up a charitable donor-advised fund, it actually creates even more generosity. Mm. And I'm going to talk about what is a donor-advised fund and how does it work, how much you should have in it, and why I believe it makes you more generous. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Now, I've been talking about this for a long time in my practice, not very much here on the show, but about creating a charitable donor advised fund or a donor advised fund. So a donor advised fund basically is an easy way to allow you to create almost like your own private foundation. You put money into it, and you've not designated where it's going to go. It's just going into this charitable fund. Once you put it in, you can't go in and take it back out for personal reasons. It's there and designated for charities, for legit charities, 501c3s. And then you receive an immediate tax deduction if you itemize your return. So again, that takes some tax strategy because maybe you don't always itemize, but maybe you want to shift some of your money into a donor advised fund. So I have some highly appreciated stock. Been very fortunate to own maybe one of the Magnificent Seven and just made a ton of money. I'm like, you know what? I don't really know who I want to give this money to yet, because giving an appreciated stock to a charity is a great way, right? You just shift it over. You get the deduction for the value. They don't pay the tax on the sale. Or you can move it over to a donor-advised fund. That's why I really never like putting cash into a donor-advised fund. You don't get any benefit for that. You gift property into a donor-advised fund, appreciated property. So you get the tax deduction. Then you can sit back and decide how you want to give it out. Oh, you want to give to this golf outing for the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame? Boom. You want to give some money for CASA? Boom. Boys and Girls Club? Boom. I am a little biased to those organizations, so you can give to whoever you want. Church? Boom. It's gone. So it's a great way. But what I think, Doug, and you and I had this discussion, once you've put it into the charitable fund, it's gone.
Yes.
It's been given. Now it's just a matter of choosing who and how you give it to. So I personally think that you've already made the decision to give it away, so now it makes you more generous. Because you're like, well, it's already been given away. I've got the tax deduction. Sure. And you just get on your computer, call your advisor, and the check gets cut from the fund. It goes directly to them if you want it to. And boom, it's done. I just think it makes you more generous.
Well, anything I think that you put in a system and it makes you it causes you to think about it. So the other value is that statements keep coming in, right?
Right.
And you say, oh, I've got a donor advised fund. What do I do? What do I do? What's on my mind today? As someone might say, as the spirit moves me, what do I see today that needs to be addressed with this particular gift and this particular money? And I do think, to your point, it does make people designated givers. And that, I think, is a pretty great way to train your mind and to put in your financial plan. Every year I have a financial plan. I have a business plan, a giving plan, and a financial plan. And each year, I have items I want to check off the list in each one of those categories. And what is interesting, and I'm not trying to say I'm a great giver, but what is interesting is that business plan is pretty much, you know, a steady thing. You're trying to grow your business, trying to do the right things. What do you want to do more of, less of these things? Financial plan, you have certain financial goals that you want to reach, blah, blah, blah. But that giving plan tends to be a place I find myself to be most creative. I don't talk about it. Nobody knows really what I do. Maybe one person does. But I tend to be more creative in that. And so I do think it also begins to create a creativity in you that when you designate a space in your plan just for giving.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful thing
to
do.
I need to do a better job of that because I'm a willy-nilly giver. You know, I mean, there's few things we give consistently because it automatically comes out of our checking account or whatever. Otherwise, I'm just a yes man. You know, it's like, ah, sure, what the heck. That's why I put my brother Dan in charge of our checkbook at the office, because he's a no man.
Yes.
He's a no to everything, man. Yes. So it makes it convenient. Well, it's interesting, because I think, how much should you put in there? Well, remember, this will continue on. So when you die, you'll appoint someone to carry this on, so it creates a legacy. And maybe you put a giving policy in place, like, hey, Will, my son, here's the things I want you to do with this money. I want you to continue to support the 4-H. I want you to continue to do this and continue to do that for me in my memory. Great. But don't forget, guys, he can do whatever he wants to do. You've appointed him to do that. You just kind of gave him some guidelines. You hope he follows. But then what if there's money when he dies? You know, someone has to continue this on. So don't forget, I always think about this. If you're over 70 and a half, you probably don't need to set up a donor advised fund, unless you want to. Certain wealth levels, maybe so. If you don't care about that aspect of the legacy, because you can give directly from your IRA tax-free. You should be doing all of your giving from your IRA if you're over 70 and a half. It's all tax-free. Whatever you give goes towards your future required minimum distribution. So if I'm 73 or 75, whatever age it is that I hit my RMD age, that required distribution is met by a qualified charitable distribution. So I do think when you sit down with people, and I do this all the time, it's funny, I don't do it for myself, but I ask people, tell me about who you give to on a consistent basis. What other type of giving do you do? And I know it's somewhat personal, but we're in the personal business, right? We need to know these things. And it's not because I necessarily care who you give to or try to encourage or discourage who you give money to. That's totally up to you and your family and whatever. But I just want to know, like, who you're giving to, when you're going to give it, and then let me help you determine the best ways to give it. And part of it could be a charitable donor advised fund. And once again, because my money's in my IRA, I can give it, but it's another choice I have to give. But I set the fund up, dude. It's gone. It's already been given. Now it's just me deciding who to allocate those funds to. All right. It's all about your mentality. It's mindset. Over will set, skill set. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, and wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, thank you for listening, everyone. If you missed any of the show on its Thursday night airing, Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. is its most popular spot. And then always on WGCLradio.com. And then you can pick it up after the Thursday night airing on your favorite, whatever they call those things, you know, like podcasts.
Yes,
podcasts. I don't see people say, I heard you on the podcast say this. To me, the 2025 Final Drive is a podcast, like 10, 15 minutes. This is the radio show.
Right.
So I have to rewire myself to say, oh, you're talking about the radio show. Because the podcast, I've actually been a loser, and I haven't done one for several months. But we have decided that we're going to start peeling out pieces of the show that are related to taxes and putting those into a podcast for 2025, the Final Drive. And I would simply do an intro and an outro, and boom, there we go.
Okay.
So, because we were building that listening audience up huge, and then when you quit putting out content, you fall way down and fall off the radar and all that. So anyway, so expect some changes coming soon.
Well, we know that you'll do well, and the sources are endless to find the different content that's out there for you, for sure.
People say, how do you come up with new stuff every week? I said, I'm like a preacher. I got a book, and I can just go to it, and I can regurgitate, reiterate, explain things different ways. And people only pay attention when it's meant for them to pay attention. So
exactly,
that's
right.
The way it goes. All right, let's take the long break. We'll have a great show again next week, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.